Welcome to art.
Wah, wah, wah.
With.
Fiona Verity.
Say it again.
Fiona?
No.
Fiona Verity.
And Julie Nicholson.
This week's episode, episode 42, is a fabulous chat with artist Richard Claremont. You can find Richard Claremont on Instagram, and you might know him as the postman who paints. We had a really, really interesting chat with Richard and over Zoom, and learnt that he could have even been a musician as opposed to a painter. He told us loads of great stuff about his teaching. Do check out his skilled artist course that's online, and he has heaps and heaps of tips on his social media where you can learn lots and lots. So thanks again, Richard, for chatting to us and revealing that you're more than happy to share, and that behind every great man is a fabulous woman. So big shout out to Kerry, Richard's wife.
Yeah. Your lighting is marvellous. We both look like we need to go to the hospital.
Oh no, we're looking a bit dead.
We think we look ill.
It's a bit of a reality check, the old term, isn't it?
I couldn't do it all day. No, awful.
It was horrible during lockdown. I actually did a lot of my teaching on Zoom, and it was starting to drive me up the wall.
Right.
It's no fun.
And then we got loads of new equipment with our grant for the podcast, and I'll tell you, we it hasn't been kind to us for a while, has it? But we finally got it sorted, and now we're back on Zoom.
Yeah, I know, right. It's crazy. We got it, yeah, we finally, last week's interview was so slick. The sound was perfecto, but
actually Zoom's really good.
Yeah.
As long as there's not too much background noise, Zoom's actually quite good.
Yeah, it seems to be able to suppress some background noise too. I think I saw a setting for that. I don't know how good it is, but it says here, suppress background noise on auto. So
sort out my appearance button as well, but that clearly hasn't worked today.
We've softened it.
Yeah. That doesn't do the hair.
Yeah. Your hair looks great.
Face. Yeah. Forget about the hair.
Oh. So Richard, you went to a Steiner school, I believe.
Yes, I did.
You did. Do you think that's influenced you in your creative pursuits?
Well, Rudolf Steiner does place a great emphasis on the creativity of the child in general. So I was exposed to a lot of art at school, but a lot of really interesting subjects generally. Like, we didn't just study, you know, geography, geometry. We studied things like Norse myths, that's hard to say, Norse myths, and a lot of those sort of folk cultures. So it was a very very rich education that fostered a love of storytelling and looking at different forms of Indigenous art in other countries around the world. It was a really rich education, so it definitely has influenced me. And a lot of my schoolmates who I still keep in contact with all these years later have gone into artistic fields as well. So
really, that's interesting, isn't it?
Education.
We just interviewed a young artist who went to Steiner School in New York, and I think what it must do is just teach you how to play, but keep you playing.
Yeah.
As opposed to maybe mainstream education can be a little bit stifling in that respect. So I think it opens you up to experimenting and doing your
own
thing.
Absolutely. I mean, our art education, in inverted commas, was very loose. And it really was a case of, you know, here's a box of crayons, here's some watercolors, just sort of paint what you feel, with a few guidelines. But there were no structured lessons. It was all about experimenting, exploring, developing your individual approach. So that definitely did come out early. Yeah,
it's marvelous. I wish that the world could be like a Steiner school. I think I'd like to live in a Steiner world where everything is much more free.
It's too expensive, Steiner, these days. It's not that easy.
My poor dad now sending three of us kids to a Steiner school. It was pretty expensive. I definitely wouldn't change it at all. I love my education, my school. school days are probably the happiest days of my life. So not complaints at all.
Good. And then you went on to art school after that, didn't you? And what did you study there? Was it graphics?
Well, I did. I studied graphic design for work experience in year 10. So at that stage, I thought, you know, the only way to make money as an artist is to become a graphic designer, right? So this was 1980, and, you know, that seemed like the logical step forward to making money from art. So that's kind of where I thought my career was heading. As it turned out, when I did finish school, I studied at Sydney College of the Arts, a fine arts degree. So, yeah, I made the decision to keep going with fine arts as opposed to graphic design. I was starting to develop an interest in art and painting, but no more than my interest in all the arts generally. I actually wanted to become a writer, and I actually thought that I'd have more chance of being a writer. That's what I was more interested in, actually. But music fascinated me as well. I played the drums. I was kind of like, art was kind of just one thing. Painting was just one thing amongst my artistic interests, not the biggest thing at all. So
you could have been Richard Claremont, the famous drummer.
I could have been. Yeah, who knows what would have happened if our little three-piece college band had hit the dizzy heights, you never know.
Who knows? Well, a lot of musicians turn into artists later on in their life or go back to it, don't they? Keith Richards and...
Yeah.
Is it Keith Richards? One of them paints. No, the other Rolling Stone. Anyway, it's quite... Yeah. I suppose it goes hand in hand, doesn't it?
I think when you're that famous, you could do stick men. And
that's true.
Maybe I could paint while I drum. That would be...
Yeah, I like that idea. You get some interesting marks. Put the paint on the drum skin.
Yeah.
Strap the paintbrush to a drumstick.
Yeah. When you left Sydney College of the Arts, was your intention to carry on and be that was your living, a painter?
Not at all. After that, I gave up art for many years. I didn't know how to progress it. At Sydney College of the Arts, you know, back in the 80s, art education was very unstructured, and I didn't learn anything at art college. It was a very theoretically based college, and probably still is. You were kind of just given a studio space, and, you know, once a semester, your teacher would come around and sort of stroke his chin and see how you went, and keep up the good work. See you next semester. So, you know, meantime, you're sort of in a studio space with three or four other artists, which I actually found more stimulating than anything. But, you know, look, I didn't learn any skills at art school. So I just didn't actually know how to progress it. So I decided I'd go travelling instead. So I travelled around the world. I lived in North America for a couple of years, travelled in Europe extensively. Had my son fairly early after that, and kind of settled into early family life, and art got shelved for probably 10 years or so after that. So yeah, it's funny, like things sort of come around again when they're meant to, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, that's right. I know, because like if you'd have gone straight into painting after art school, you know, it's obviously going to be a struggle when you're young and just starting out. You wonder whether you would have ended up not doing it at all eventually, but you've come through it the other way, where you've got, you know,
life experience
and some, you know,
absolutely. And I mean that is very important for an artist, I think, to get a few miles on the clock, so to speak, a few life experiences to paint from. And of course, back in the 80s, there was no internet, so you just didn't have the wealth of opportunities that you've got now. And you know, the chances of actually getting an exhibition, let alone, you know, making a career as a professional artist. Like, if my 20-year-old self had known that one day I'd be making a good living from my art, I just would not have believed it. I would have thought, how is this possible? Like, just to get a solo show would be my absolute dream. So the possibilities were so limited. And, you know, without any help, mentoring, I just really didn't know what to do with it. So I kind of just, put it aside until the mid-90s. I sort of had another crack at it, but had a couple of solo shows just locally around where I lived in Wollongong, and I did have a couple of shows in Sydney as well. But then again, like, you know, life gets in the way again, and I built a house and got distracted by, you know, all those homely things, and got shelved again for another 5 or 6 years. So It's really only the last 5 years, I'd say, that I've taken it up again, seriously, and decided to make a career of it.
So you've only been painting like full time for the last 5 years?
Yeah, I have. And like I don't know if you read in my bio.
You're a postie.
Yeah.
We love that about you, Richard. Honestly, I think it's awesome. It's such a great...
Yeah. I used to follow you on Instagram and then I didn't realise you were a postman, and then I saw you...
Yeah, your bike.
On your bike, and I was like, what's he doing? I was a postman.
I love it.
So that was sort of the day job for 30 years that kept me going. And, I have been painting for the last 10 years or so, but as of 4.5 years ago, I quit the postie job after nearly 30 years and thought, right, this is the time, full-time art for me. The art career was already going well. I was already making a full-time income just from my art. So,
couldn't let your bike go, could you? Mm-hmm.
It was pretty hard. Like, it was a hard job to give up. So I still really liked it. It's just that I kind of ran out of time to do it. I had so much art to do and so many opportunities that I just ran out of time to do it. But I really miss it. I miss the creative time riding around on the bike. And
so was that good thinking time?
It's fantastic thinking time. And, as I'd ride around, I was just thinking of paintings the whole time, because I love painting little street scenes. And everywhere I went, like, my brain sort of composing these scenes and thinking, how would I do the sweep of that road? And where would I put that telegraph pole? And what would the contrast point be there between the sky and the tree? And it's just like this filter over my eyes. So everywhere I go, I'm composing paintings like this. Mm-hmm. So
how are you on the mail delivery? Did you manage to post them correctly? Or
I progressively became not a very reliable postie, it has to be said.
Just stopping on the street corner having a paint.
Yeah.
I was just so hell-bent on just getting home and getting back to my studio. Let's just say a few mistakes might have been made, but
that's all right.
We'll blame that on Australia Post.
I was similar when I had smaller kids and you're in the car all the time and you're thinking about painting, and I did a lot of that just driving around, and I did a lot of road paintings because that's what you see, and you do see painting, you're like, oh, I love that light, oh my god. And I used to balance the phone on the top of the steering wheel while I'm driving, click click click. Just I suppose that's part of it. When you don't have the time to paint, a lot of people give up and don't do it. I just think you've got to embrace those little bits of time that you get any thinking time about doing it in the future.
I think that's right, and I think it is a bit of a test of the artist within you, that in a situation where you are deprived of either time or materials or resources, whether you can still use that time creatively, whether it's just, photographing, researching for future paintings, even sketching little drawings as you go around, but just keeping your mind active and in that artistic mindset. I think that really is the test of an artist that is going to stand the test of time and be in it for the long haul. It's a good
I think you're right, Richard, and I think that's with the students that I've had for quite a few years, I say to them that I want you to become obsessed, and once you're obsessed, it's a bit like when you don't brush your teeth when you go out in the morning, you feel gross if you don't do it.
Yes. But,
and I want my students to feel like that if they don't draw every day.
Absolutely.
You get to the end of the day and you think, oh, I haven't drawn today, I feel gross, I want to do it.
Absolutely. It's all about habits.
Yeah, I want my students to feel gross. No, like brushing your teeth. So
I agree. Habits are so important. Habits really are the bedrock of success in anything.
Yeah, definitely.
To develop a system that is just automatic, showing up for work every day, whatever it is you do, just that routine and setting productivity cues when you're in your studio. Right, I'm here to paint, I'm here to work. I put that particular music on, that means it's time to paint. All these sort of things.
What is that music, Richard? You got me interested now. Which is your...
Oh, look, I'm an old 80s guy, so I'm right there with all the hits of the 80s. I've sort of just got them on permanent shuffle on my computer. So, nothing too adventurous. Just something like with a bit of a beat just to get me going. And
Whitney Houston on a Monday morning.
Yeah. I will always love you. I like a bit of Bohemian Rhapsody when I need to get going.
Absolutely.
Good bit of gessoing to Bohemian Rhapsody.
Got that, yeah. Just put whatever. I'm quite open, but I mean, I don't depend on music, and I listen to podcasts a lot too. So anything that's kind of informative, or I do like thinking about the business side of my work. So I do listen to a lot of business podcasts as well. I find that a really helpful way just to, you know, do something else while I'm painting as well. So always looking to multi-skill and make the use of my time.
Yeah, business podcasts are a good idea. I might do that. So your story about being a postman, and then obviously you sounds like you were actually an artist anyway and exhibiting, but do you think that it really helps with marketing and social media to have a story around your work, or is that just it just happened to be
it? I think it just happened to be, and you know, that all started about 4 years ago. So a local journalist found out that I was, you know, a postman who did art, and couldn't believe that no one had ever done a story on this. So she contacted me for an interview, and they, before I knew it, Channel 9 and Channel 7 and the ABC were ringing me up and following me around with cameras, filming me on my run. And
superstar, Richard, you really are.
Because I used to do these little paintings around my run. I'd have a little little cigar box that I'd set up and do these little paintings. So, you know, I'd set that up and I'd do a little bit of painting with the cameras, and it's a little bit set up. But, I mean, it was what I was doing anyway. But, yeah, within the space of about a month, I became the painting postie, and I was on the Today Show, the Morning Show Live, and all this kind of stuff. So it was a bit of a baptism of fire into media. It was good, but I always knew at the time, look, this isn't going to last, and, you know, people will forget about me and move on to something else.
I think the main thing is it's very inspiring to a lot of people out there that are a teacher or work in a factory or have aspirations to do something else that they really want to do. And you did that. And I think people go, oh, I could do that. I could aspire to something that I really in my heart want to do. So I think that's...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And not see your day job as a handicap, but see it as an asset.
Yeah.
Use it to define your unique take on the world, which is what I was doing. I thought, okay, here I am, I'm a postie. Look, I'd rather be at home in my studio. So what can I do? I'll bring my studio out on the run with me. So I got into the habit of doing these tiny little paintings as I went around, just to, you know, keep myself occupied during the day. And, you know, it's just that idea of using the life that you have and bringing that into your art.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? Yeah. And I think also, like, you know, I would say to the kids, make your own happiness. If you want to do something, you've got to make it happen.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to get out there and do it. And we interviewed Amber Creswell Bell the other day, and she gets up at 2 a.m. because she has insomnia, but she embraces it and she uses that to write and time to do other things. So I think, like you say, whatever circumstance you're in, you've got to embrace it and turn it around to something positive.
Absolutely. I mean, there's always an artistic angle to everything you do. If you're really fired up and passionate to be an artist, every area of your life you can bring into it. You know, even if you're a stay-at-home mum and you know, your time's precious, you know, go out to the park, sketch in the park, whatever you can do to, you know, keep your art practice alive, and draw on the experiences in your life that are real, because people are fascinated by your life. And then this is what I try to teach my students. Don't think that you've got a boring life, because there will be something there that people will relate to.
Yeah.
You've just got to identify what's the unique thing about you? What do you do differently? What's a combination of things in your life that no one else has? Try and identify those things and bring it into your art, because that will make your art stand out. Yeah. As we know, it's very competitive with art now. There's a lot of people on Instagram. It's kind of hard to find your way amongst all that noise. So anything you can do to define yourself and you know, make yourself stand out without being too gimmicky, it's not about creating this, you know, image or this myth for yourself. It's really just identifying what's already there, what's unique about your practice. I like to call it the category of one. What's your category of one? What's the category that you can dominate? Oh, I'm the only, you know, and in my case, I was the only postman who could go out and do a painting in 10 minutes while out delivering mail. That's a point of difference.
Definitely. You're right. That's what it is. It's the point of difference. It's what makes you you.
Well, and being honest, like in not, as you say, like trying to be someone else, you're like, I'm a postman and this is what I do, and people absolutely love that.
Well, that's the antithesis of this podcast, really, Richard, is that, which is why we call it Art Wank, because we want to remove the wank from the art world, because it doesn't need to be this sort of elite, mysterious world. It's exactly what you've just said, exactly. And that's what we're loving, is meeting and talking to the makers and getting a better understanding of that.
Sure. Look, there's really been no better time to be an artist than right now. Like,
I agree.
Absolutely changed everything. And this is what I try to teach my students. You can make a very successful career for yourself as an artist. There's never been a better time to do that. There's never been a better time to learn more quickly. We're also connected. We're just getting skilled a lot more quickly. You know, those days of, you know, you'd have to go to art school, study for 3 years, and you know, you may or may not learn skills. These days, there's so many online courses, and students can talk to each other in real time and compare work in real time. We're just getting a lot better quicker. And that's the thing that, you know, if you've got a little bit of drive and ambition, you can really get ahead a lot more quickly now. You don't have to wait for gatekeepers to, you know, give you that rubber stamp. I got tired of waiting. I got tired of waiting to be invited into the art world. I just didn't have any more time. Like, I had enough body of work that I knew I could stage my own show. So I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go out and hire my own gallery space. I've already curated my own crowd online, what I like to call the pocket crowd. So the portable audience, you know, build an audience that you can keep in your pocket on your phone. Wherever you show, whatever you do, they will show up. It doesn't matter if it's a gallery or if it's just the cafe on the corner or if it's an online show. If you can make a really good, convincing story and communicate well with your clientele, your customers, they will follow you wherever you turn up.
How did you build such a great audience online?
Well, I mean, to start with, I actually don't know anything about Instagram marketing. I've never studied it. I don't understand the algorithm. I've never really got into that. But there's two things that I do know. If you keep aiming to do high quality work and you show up often, those two things are what has enabled me to build my Instagram audience. Just those two things. Always trying to get better at my art and post it regularly. Post it regularly. Be seen as someone who shows up. Be seen as someone who's in the game. You know, buyers, collectors, they like to know that you're going to be there for the long haul. Mm. If you disappear for, you know, a month or 2 months or a year at a time, they get nervous. They think that you've drifted off, or, you know, you might not be worth investing in. The most valuable thing, like art itself, is just keep showing up and doing it. I think if you... Yeah, so just getting back to your question, I mean, my audience was grown probably over 3 years when Instagram was in its heyday, probably 3 to 4 years ago. It was a lot easier to get followers than it is now. It is a bit harder to build a crowd now. But what I tell my students is really just come back to your skills. Keep trying to get your skills better. Your skills will shine brighter than the brightest beacon. Let that be your advertisement to the world.
I think people like following you when you're progressing as well, because they feel like they're on the journey with you.
Absolutely, it's all part of that. They want to keep up with your journey in real time. And this is why I don't teach anything about artist statements or this kind of stuff. And I think it's part of that art wank that you're basically talking about. What I tell my students is, let your daily practice be your artist statement.
Exactly.
And find your work, don't care about some catalogue essay that was written by this person over here. No. I just want to know, how well do I know this artist? Have I seen his progression? What do other people think? Let me join in the conversation. You know, I just want to follow this person's story in real time. So
And then they fall in love with it regardless of what's written about it.
Exactly. And fall in love with the image as opposed to the words. You know, if you have to write about a piece, surely it's getting away from the whole purpose of visual art.
Mm. Yeah. It depends on what's written. I think sometimes it's nice to know. That's a good thing about Instagram. It's a short little piece of writing.
Yeah.
And it's normally quite chatty and informal, and it might say something about why you painted that. But you don't need, like you say, the catalogues often to showcase. But,
I also think, Richard, that you were particularly generous with your artist tips or your teaching tips, which I think I followed your Studio Door for a long time, your other Instagram platform that you had.
Yep.
And I think that was fantastic. And Debbie McKinnon, who's an artist I'm sure you know, who's she's mentored me for years, and I've done collaborative work with her. She's also very generous with her. And I think people appreciate that. Followers are so grateful, and it gives people confidence within their purchases. Then, you know, you've got these aspirational artists who want to own your work.
Yeah, sure. And I think it's just, you know, a really nice way that you can give back to the art community by passing on your knowledge. Like, I'm not protective about what I've done or what I've achieved. I'm excited about it. Like, I really want other artists to achieve as well, because the stronger they are, the stronger I am, the stronger the art community is. You know, let them not be secret knowledge. Like, you know, don't be a gatekeeper that hoards this knowledge over here, or sort of, you know, ekes it out to, you know, to your local club. Like I sort of like knowledge to be universal.
Yeah.
And giving all artists a little bit of empowerment to use the things that I've learned. They're not the only things, but I'm just sort of saying these are a few things that I've learned along the way, and I'm happy to pass them on. If they're useful to you, please use them. You know, I think these days we learn from multiple sources. So, you know, if I can be just one voice out there contributing to the discussion and helping art education in general, I'm quite happy to be that, because I want the arts to stay strong. And I think now more than ever, like it's an incredible time to be an artist. The arts are just getting stronger and stronger because of discussions like this that we're having. Like you just couldn't do this 20 years ago.
That's right. And I think the community, art community benefit from everyone's successes and sharing stuff. And because wouldn't it be great if the Australian art scene became one of the best in the world? Which, you know, obviously it's a small market compared to the rest of the world. Obviously there's, you know, one of the best anyway, but wouldn't it be great if there was a strong art community in every town, because everyone was not afraid?
Exactly. And the thing is, we've always been, we're a smaller population. Well, we're obviously two Poms, but we're Aussies now, so we count ourselves as Aussies. Because the population here has always been smaller, and we were considered a very long way away, with the changes in the world, that doesn't count anymore. You know, you can sell work all over the world now and be successful with it.
Absolutely. And I think the global art community is a big force to be reckoned with now. And that's something that I'm discovering since I've set up my online art school, The Skilled Artist. I've got now more than 1,200 students all around the world.
Yeah.
From the United States, the UK, Canada, South America, New Zealand, all around the world. And
so exciting to have that.
It really is.
Well done you, Richard. You've done a great job at getting that up and running.
Thank you.
That's a huge feat. I mean, how on earth are you juggling that and painting? There's two Richards. I think I can see your clone in the corner there.
I did have a portrait back there somewhere, but behind every great man, there's a great woman. So I do have my wife, Kerry, who...
I knew it. You've got some amazing feminist attitudes as well, I reckon. Go, Kerry, I say.
I have to, or I get clobbered.
We need a wife. I've been looking for a wife to organise me. So does she do your market? Like, does she run that kind of side of things for you?
Look, Kerry's got a supporting role in my teaching. So we do real life workshops around the world.
Which are impossible to get into. I try.
I don't do that many. And of course, this has been such an absolute shocker that I haven't been able to do any anywhere. So... So that's why I started the online school, just as a way of connecting with people who were on my workshop list, who wanted to do workshops that I could see I was just never going to get to. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to put it all online. So that's where we do it. We're in the middle of one at the moment called the 30-Day Art Recharge. And that's just posting a series of online tutorials with worksheets to go with it. And then the students do them, complete paintings and exercises based on that every 2 days, post their work in the Facebook group. And we have a chat about it. Kerry and I critique it. And then we move on to the next one. So this is, a 1 month sort of rolling workshop.
It's the first time. How many have you got in that group? That's huge.
This one's got 200. So there's a fair bit of work.
So you're critiquing 200 artworks every 2 days?
Yeah, look, they don't all require critiquing, but, you know, between Kerry and I, we definitely get around everyone who posts their work. Not everyone's comfortable in posting their work.
No, sure.
The ones that do, we make sure we give attention and encouragement to.
Yeah.
So it does take up a lot of time, and it means that I can't do much painting for the month. It's all pretty much what I'm teaching at the moment.
Yeah.
But it's exciting. It's so exciting. I just, you know, like seeing my students post their work, it's like everyone, every time I see a painting, it feels like a gift coming back to me. I get so used to, you know, bombarding the whole world with my work all the time and sort of annoying everyone. Well, here he is again, another post on Instagram. That to see work coming back onto my feed based on exercises that I've set, I just feel so incredibly grateful that these people are actually listening to me. And that they're doing these paintings, so I get to look at every day, which I learn from. We all learn from.
I agree, definitely.
It absolutely blows me away. And why didn't I think of that? You know, like, look what she's doing. She's got all these layers and techniques. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's just a big melting pot of creativity. And
yeah, it is rewarding, isn't it?
And I think in lockdown, it's I did a couple of National Art School online courses, and people, there was, you know, 12 in the class or something, and they were from all over the country. I mean, overseas, one of them. Like, it just, I mean, in Australia, it's hard to get to some urban centres in a lot of places. So to have things like what you're doing is incredible. Yeah. It's great.
Right. I mean, online teaching, of course, it's a totally different environment to real life teaching. Like everything, there's a good side, there's a bad side. I try to focus on the good side, which is that you can actually teach a whole lot more online to a lot more people and a lot better, I think. You can post extra resource lists, you can post links to things, it enables a worldwide conversation. Things you just can't do in a real life workshop. I think it's, you know, I enjoy real life workshops, but the scope,
there's a place for both, isn't there? There's a place for both.
Absolutely.
And I think some people gain from being able to go at their own pace or repeat. I was the video. So I was talking to a young uni student yesterday who's just finished his first year at Canberra Uni, and he said that actually he really enjoyed, because some of his lectures he could put on double speed. I was like, what? He said, I could speed them up. So the lecturer, you know, he said, one of my lecturers has got a really slow voice. And I was thinking, wow, this is amazing.
You sound like Mickey Mouse.
I know. It's a bit crazy.
No, it's great. It is. And that ability to just access the lesson in your own time too. All my lessons are downloadable lectures. So people can watch them in their own time. They don't have to turn up for a Zoom meeting like this, everyone together.
No.
They just download it, watch it, and then in this particular class, they've got 2 days to do the exercise and post it online. So everyone gets to be part of the conversation in their particular time zone. Some people are lagging a bit behind, but that's okay. They catch up and get encouraged. So the flexibility of the online learning environment really is incredible. And it just scales amazingly around the world. We're just getting amazing feedback for it, so it's really
good.
Really encouraging.
So you love to travel as well, and you went on a trip in 2011 for a couple of years,
you do something like 13 countries in 51 days, I read.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I would have.
Remember
that
trip?
11. That would have been right. Wow, you've dug back in my archives there.
We've dug up some. But we were just curious about that trip. and how you went about painting on that trip. Did you paint in oil on that trip?
That particular trip in 2011, I don't believe I painted on. I think I was sketching on that trip. The trips that I've painted on have been more in the last 5 years or so. France has been a favourite destination. We've been to France 3 or 4 years in a row. So I love painting in Paris. I love painting in the French countryside. It's fantastic. We go to Portugal now and teach in Portugal once a year. So that's a fantastic opportunity for painting in little seaside towns in the Algarve in southern Portugal.
Beautiful.
The UK is a probably the favourite travel destination of mine. I'm addicted to the Lake District. That place is just heaven on earth for me, a source of eternal inspiration. I can't wait to get back there again. But pretty much everywhere in the UK, I just love it. I even love Manchester and places like that. I love painting the canals. I love painting industrial scenery. Fascinating, the history. There's so much to go.
It is. It's stunning. There's so much to paint in the UK.
It's like a microcosm of the whole world. Like, you guys have got everything there. And just
It's very diverse within a short distance. I think you just look at language, it's fascinating to think how you can go from one village to the next and the accent changes. Whereas in Australia, I still cannot tell the difference really between someone from Perth and Sydney. You know what I mean?
There's probably just a syllable or two different.
Yeah. There's literally, you go 10 miles in England and it's different, different
like language. That Yorkshire accent.
Yeah. So have you always painted in oils? Have you ever used other mediums?
Yeah, look, primarily I am an oil painter. That's why I started in high school. That's all, like, back in the late 70s, there kind of wasn't a whole lot of acrylic paint around anyway, so you just started in oils. That's what painting was. And that practice has just really stuck. So I am primarily an oil painter. I do use acrylics as part of my process. Often my process will involve blocking in acrylic first just to get a few shapes down, but my paintings for the most part are all finished in oil, quite thick, you know, in pasto oil.
Your underpainting is predominantly acrylic? Is that just from a speed perspective?
It is. Like I paint very quickly, so I like to move from one layer to the next quickly. I'm not one of these painters that likes to fiddle and can wait a whole day for a layer to dry. Like, the thought of one painting taking a week to me is just absolute hell on earth. Like, I have to finish paintings pretty much the same day or 2 days max, or I'm just done with it. I've got to finish it and move on.
So you are very quick, Richard. Just from watching some of your videos, I think that the speed that you work is part of your technique, isn't it? You're expressive and fast. And
is that what helped you loosen up?
Definitely.
That's because he was having to get it done in between delivering the letters.
Well, my wife will attest to how impatient I am, so I guess the art practice follows along those lines.
You've got to be true to yourself. You know, this is it. This is I think that if you would, why try and be what you're not?
I've got a lot of things I want to paint. I've got a lot of ideas in my head at any given time, so I've got to get them out. I've got to keep them moving. So from that point of view, you know, the quicker I can progress through a painting, the better. That doesn't mean that I don't plan it in a fair amount of detail.
To
put quite a bit of thought and preliminary work into composition. I'll do sketches and colour block-ins just to kind of get a feel for what I'm doing.
Definitely. I mean, being quick isn't I think it's the one question that really, really winds me up is often when people say, how long did that take?
Uh-huh.
And you just go, come on, it's such a dumb question. Because you know, you could do something in 5 minutes and it'd be your best piece. It doesn't matter, but you know, it could take you a lifetime to get there to that painting.
Yeah, you have to sort of untangle the intention behind that question, I think.
Yeah.
And like you, the artist in me bridles at that question immediately. I'm learning to override that and give them the benefit of the doubt that they're just someone who's interested in your process.
Yeah.
you know, that they're not necessarily looking to work out how much that painting should be worth based on, it took 10 minutes. Well, what are you doing charging?
I think maybe that's why it irks me. Like, because you know what's coming next. You're like,
it does depend where that kind of question comes from, how you answer it. But most of the time I find people just are really enthusiastic about your process.
That's true.
I try and be, you know, generous in my explanation and just, you know, educate them that you know, my actual final part of the process, the putting of the paint on the canvas, that's just the final outworking of the idea. But there might be, you know, hours or even days of thought that have gone into that. Yeah. Like my paintings start from the time I'm out walking on a beach, I'm looking at the headland, I'm looking at contrasts, I'm thinking all the time how I might do that so that,
yeah,
when it does come to the laying down paint process, all that can be a bit fast and furious because I've already got the concept in my head.
And do you work from, how do you work up towards a show? So you've done some great shows at Arrow Gallery in Sydney. So do you plan prior to that, okay, I'm going to have X amount of large ones and small ones, and or do you work on a body of work on a certain part of Sydney, or I don't know, how do you do it?
Yeah, look, I usually try to have a loose theme. I don't like to constrain myself too much, but for Sydney, I generally do paint a Sydney theme. So it might be, you know, the harbourside suburbs like Balmain, Harbour Bridge around the foreshore. But other times it might be a trip to New South Wales, like Bathurst, where I spent a lot of time as a child. So I'll do a theme on the countryside. I've recently come to interior painting as well. So I'd like to incorporate some of my interiors into that as well. I guess I'd like to have enough theme to tie it all together, but I also like there to be variety. So, I think the days of curating a show purely on a theme and all that is probably a little bit heavy for me at the moment. I like to just kind of paint, you know, my collection of work from the last 6 months.
Yeah.
But you know, having said that, like often my natural cycle will be on a theme anyway. So,
yeah.
And I guess as far as paintings go, I've got a rough idea in my head, like how many paintings are going to fill out that particular space, and because for the last 4 years I've showed at Arrow Gallery, I know the walls and I kind of know, yeah, that painting will go there and I need a big one of that size for there, which is good because it really pushes me to keep painting bigger sizes.
Yeah. So how do you think about the sizes? So what sort of influences your choice of sizes? Do you ever think about your purchases, or are you just purely painting what Richard wants to paint?
Look, I pretty much paint what I want to paint, but I know what subject matter works per size as well. Like, for instance, my florals, I'm yet to go really, really big with them. Their sweet spot seems to be small to medium.
Yeah, they're intimate, aren't they?
Because they're, you know, quite concentrated texture. You've usually got petals and foliage and interesting things where viewers come right up and look at it. That's suitable for a smaller format. Whereas if I'm painting, say, a big landscape of Bathurst, I can see big rolling hills and there's going to be a lot more gestural mark making, bigger skies. And that kind of format really is suited to, you know, at least, you know, 1 meter by 1 meter, that kind of thing. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a preferred size? Do you like working big or small, or you're not bothered?
Look, I probably prefer medium. So I'm just about to start a painting today that's 60 by 60 centimetres. That's sort of my go-to size. I like squares because they're nicely balanced.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my go-to size, the mid-size. I do like to push myself to, say, 1.2 by 1.4 metres. It feels a bit scary because I do use a lot of paint. So yeah. I've really got to upscale everything. I've got to upscale my whole concept of the painting. I've got to upscale the amount of paint I use, the size of the brushes that I use. So I've got to keep constantly reminding myself that a bigger painting
needs bigger tools. Yeah.
Big all round. So it pushes me.
So you've got the broom out, Richard. You're getting the broom on there.
I do have a broom in my cupboard there, and I'm going to demonstrate it one day. I've got this fantasy of demonstrating it live on Instagram for the first time, this amazing broom painting.
Why not?
I could crash or burn in front of everyone live.
Yeah. So do you sell a lot of work online? Through Instagram or other means?
Yes, I do. Predominantly I do. I do have a core list of collectors who are looking online at my work every day as I post it. So initially, like 3 years ago, I sold most of my work at exhibitions, but now it is increasingly online. That is the environment that...
Great, isn't it? Do you think people have become more confident with online purchases this year, or do you think are these previous customers that are buying another one, or are these people who are just punting and getting more confident with what they see is what they get?
I think it's a mix of both. So definitely I do have a core group of clients who have bought my work before, have come to shows, know exactly what that painting online is going to look like because they've bought my work before. So that's the advantage of already having shown your work in real life. But the other thing is exactly what you said, that looking at art online is just becoming part of most people's experience of art now. Like if you think of the number of people who, so say you post a painting online, how many people are going to see that online versus seeing it in real life? Probably only 1% of people who see that image in total will see it in real life. So the other 99% will only ever see a digital image of that. So I think the comfort zone for absorbing and experiencing digital art is growing all the time. I think it's becoming a default way of how we're doing everything online, talking online. It's a whole new language.
Do you think, you know, new students leaving university now would be more savvy to not be represented by a gallery in, you know, and just sell their work online where they, you know, and put on their own shows where they're not giving 50% to the galleries? I mean, it seems like the world's opening up.
That's the model that I encourage. It can take a few steps to get to a working version of that. Certainly took me a couple of years to do that. So
and a Kerry. You need a Kerry.
Need a Kerry in the background. Everyone needs a Kerry in the background. I think the gallery model suits two kinds of artists. Those just starting out, like literally, you know, straight out of art school or school. I think it's good to just to get a little bit of world experience, get your work out there on the wall, give yourself a little bit of confidence. Hey, look, I've had my work in a gallery. I've shown my work. I think that's great. I think the other kind of artist that galleries work for is artists at the end of their career who are the real big names in art. You know, if you look at Australia, you know, the Elizabeth Cummings and the Guy Warrens they've done the hard
work.
They just can't be bothered with selling their own work. They've got such a big clientele that they're quite happy to pass that part of selling it over to some gallery to do it for them.
Yeah.
For the bulk of artists in the middle of that, which is about 90% of artists, I would say always work towards trying to sell your own work. You'll keep most of the profits, you'll maintain creative control over what you do. Most importantly, you'll be able to communicate with your buyers better than any gallery ever could. No one can tell your story better than you can. Don't rely on other people that they're going to be able to talk about your work in the same way that you can and influence your audience to the same degree that you can. An audience always wants to hear things straight from the horse's mouth. They'd much rather. So unless you're an artist that's just so bombarded with inquiries about your work that you just can't deal with all the sales and you want to pass that over to someone else, otherwise I do think it's worthwhile cultivating the skill of selling your own work, cultivating your own audience. So that's
You're right. No, I think it's good advice. I think, and it sort of empowers people as well all over the country or all over the world to be able to do it. Because if you're not in a regional or a centre where there's galleries, then you can't do it. But now you could live in Whoop Whoop and be successful.
That's right.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can live in Whoop Whoop and still have clients in the major city centres.
Does Whoop Whoop exist? My mum always used to say Whoop Whoop, and I moved to Australia. I realised that possibly Whoop Whoop is a real place.
Sometimes we call it the back of Burke. You heard of that one? Back of Burke. That's another one.
So you've also done the Hong Kong Art Fair.
How did that go?
Yeah, what?
Very well. Terrible.
Oh, really?
Absolutely terrible.
Hilarious.
Yeah,
Is it an art fair like one of the, like the other art fair?
Look, it's the only art fair that I've ever done, and it convinced me that art fairs aren't the proper environment.
But they're exhausting. They're like a marathon, aren't they?
Yeah. It was pretty intense, and I just found that it was not my buyer market at all. This was in Hong Kong, and there are some Australian artists who do really well there. They go back year after year, and to this particular art fair that was at the Conrad Hotel, there are some artists who really do well there. But I just found for my work, they just didn't get it. My work's very impasto, it's very painterly, it's kind of fairly classical, and I just found that the Asian market sort of wants very flat paintings. The impression I got was they just want to see like a paddle pop on a stick, a flat print of something like that. That's what art is to them. Or just very flat designer kind of,
like airbrushed, almost like airbrushed.
And they don't really care about the artist's touch. Like, it's just all about the image. They don't really care how the image is created.
Interesting, isn't it?
All my paint work was just baffling to them, and I'd sort of try and launch into these great discussions, and I could see it was just like
going at whoop.
Absolutely, completely, this, and then out of my room into the next room, let me out of here, but it didn't work for me.
Yeah, but imagine it's a good experience to, we love listening to the podcast How to Fail with Elizabeth Day. Don't know if you've come across that one. And I think it's so important that we have experiences that aren't great and then empower us. And so we can recognise, okay, that's not for me. I did the other art fair with Debbie McKinnon, and
always mentions Debbie McKinnon in every podcast.
Debbie McKinnon.
Second time.
I know, I was hoping to get double. She's got a Debometer going, and it's a bit of a running joke now with how many times can Debbie be mentioned in the ArtWank podcast.
Well, twice today.
Deb.
Carry on.
She'll pay me.
She's an absolutely fabulous artist.
She is, and she's a lovely lady. She really is. But Deb had broken her wrist when we had done the other art fair. So not only was she telling everybody that I'd pushed her, and that's why she'd broken her wrist. So I was like, I'm going to get arrested at the end of this. But obviously she was in a lot of pain, and it was just, it's like a marathon.
And she had to hang out with you for a few days.
Well, you've just done that. You know, that was lovely. It was a wonderful experience.
Yeah. So where do you predominantly, is it overseas, where does your work like resonate? Like, where is it, America or?
At the moment? Or?
Well, just since you've been selling online.
Yeah, so probably like 50% of my clientele is in Australia and 50% overseas. So yeah, the United States is a strong market, Canada as well. A little bit of Great Britain as well.
It's interesting. And is that all through Instagram, or they buy straight through your website, or you're on other, like Blue Thumb or other things like that?
I don't sell my work anywhere except through my own social media and my own website. So yeah,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, so you won't find a Richard Claremont for sale anywhere in the world except through me. So if you want to buy my work, you have to deal with me.
Good on you. I think that's the way it should be.
Well, it's just my formula. I'm not saying it's the best way or the only way, but it's a way that works for me. I do like to control my own sales and know where my work is and how it's being promoted. It's part of that quality control that I like to be involved with. I don't like the idea of just parking my work in galleries and leaving it there. For me, I don't think that's the best business model for me. I think you're better off just managing your own work, keeping your own stock room, answering your own inquiries.
It's really great. I mean, as you say, it does take a lot of work and time to build
it's
that up, but I think
it really is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the rewards are worth it. their awards.
Yeah, that's right. Definitely. Well, it's all hard work pays off, doesn't it?
Well, I think we all need to do a marketing degree alongside the fine arts, and then we'd all be killing it.
Or at least a marketing module. We really want to talk to some of the art schools about it, because we keep asking artists that have been to art school, did you do a business module as part of your degree? And either they can't remember, so I don't think they did, or the young ones are like, not yet. So
yeah. Well, they're not sure if it's not, even in there.
No. So we're thinking we're going to go straight to the horse's mouth and try and talk to
the National Art School.
See whether they can let us know. Because if not, there needs to be one. So maybe that could be your next course, Richard. Could be not the practical side of things, but the business side of things.
Well, I did pose that question to my audience a while ago. Would you like to see me produce a practical course or a business course? And it was exactly 50-50. So
hurry up.
Interesting. It was interesting to see that the demand was exactly split. So maybe the next one will be business. I'm busting to teach it.
I think you'd be great at it.
Oh, I'd sign up.
Yeah, we're in. I'm rubbish. First, number one and two, Julie and Fiona.
Yeah. We won't interrupt
you. We'll
behave. We promise.
Fiona won't.
I won't, but I'll try.
So what's on the cards?
2021.
Obviously, your new business course is coming, but what's on the cards for 2021 for you?
What's the next class for 2021?
What are you doing?
Paint wise, plan, exhibition.
Oh, the overall plan. Oh gosh, I'm so flat out just getting through this year. I haven't really planned it that much. I've got another show scheduled for the end of next year at Arrow Gallery in Sydney. I had to cancel this year's one because of COVID, of course. So I haven't exhibited anywhere this year for the first time. 6 years. I normally have two shows a year, one in Sydney and one in Melbourne, but nothing this year. So I will be champing at the bit for that. I plan to release another online course probably by April.
Is that the same? Are you going to re-release the Skilled Artist, or are you got a new one? It's the business one.
Well, it's either going to be the business one or another one that I actually have the framework for, which I haven't let on yet, but it's another big topic that people are busting to hear about. I kind of base the courses based on the questions that I get asked most, through online chats and that. And the first one was about how to loosen up your painting, because I get that in my workshops all the time. How do I loosen up my painting? So I tend to respond to what I know will resonate with most people. So the one that I've got coming is kind of another big topic.
I thought he was going to tell us
how to be a postman.
People are interested.
I like it.
How to be a postman.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah. Wow. So that's going to, it takes me about 3 months to film and edit a course. So that's going to be the first quarter of the year. I'll be producing that course, filming it, and I have an editor who puts it all together for me.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
Oh, it really is. Just to produce 2 hours of content, it involves a massive amount of filming time, scripting. You've got to be a script writer. You've got to be an actor. I've had to learn how to present on camera.
I love it. Nothing
like that before. I hadn't taught online before. And
I think you should have been on your bike.
Holding the phone up like this as I ride.
Yeah.
Well, I also just create really interesting content that flows and it progresses people. I mean, that's a real skill. I mean, you sort of have to be a proper teacher, which you've obviously learned to be.
Kerry had some input on that. She's an old teacher.
Yeah, Kerry's been teaching for 35 years.
It's all about Kerry. She is Michelle Obama. I knew it. Yeah. I'm looking forward to her book.
I'll start calling her Michelle.
She's a winner.
Well, that's fantastic. I like a team. Well done.
We'll be contacting Kerry for her interview soon.
Secrets of the Artist's Wife.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. You got the title for the book.
Yeah, the book. That's it. We'll pencil it in.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Richard. We've really enjoyed talking to you, and you've passed on some valuable tips to our listeners and to us.
Yes, thank you.
And we love your paintings, and keep going on. Mm. Get on that bike.
So exciting to meet you. We've been following you forever. So
I know. It's
lovely,
like,
to meet you.
We've seen you moving on your online course, but not having the one-on-one chat. So thanks so
much. Thank you very much for having me on. I've really enjoyed it. And
good. Yeah, and Debbie got a double mention. Oh, no, she got a triple.
Please don't forget to rate and review and share this podcast. It helps my mum and her friend Fiona get more listeners. Thank you.